सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
Some people wanted me to talk about relationships. There are a few maybe useful things to talk about around that. Everybody ready for a relationship talk? You know, even from Jung himself, who died in 53 or something like that, not sure, but quite a ways of, but even he was talking about there's a real shift in kind of the archetypal structure of relationships and what they used to be to how they're moving. And what he said, what we're moving into to now. And what he said was that kind of the governing archetype, dyadic archetype of relationships in the past that was more based on, first we'll just start with the first one, father-daughter, where the woman had more of a father-daughter relationship with her partner. And then if we look at the, from the standpoint of the man, it is more of a mother-son relationship. And so what that would mean, and I think that's how, I think it's a really, really kind of a good model to think about the way that the dynamics of relationships in the past, of marriages in the past, where the woman was like a girl is with her father. Which means the father kind of rules the roost and he's responsible for all of the decisions. And he makes the decision about what you are going to do. You know, what's going to be done, what the wife is going to do. Because he also, with his wife, had that father-daughter dynamic. And so that created, that just created an internal structure for the relationship dynamics. And that has been changing. Even when you think about the mother-son relationship, that's an interesting relationship because the children depend so much on the mom to take care of everything, you know, and to take care of the children and do everything that needs to be done and, you know, make their life nice for the kids, you know, safe and nice and clean and everything is good like that. And also interesting, the mothers raise their sons much differently than they raise their daughters. And that always isn't very conscious, but how that has played out is the mother knows that she has to take care of the daughter's father, the father, the husband, and the children, and the house, and all of these things. And so when she raises her daughter, she trains her to do all of these jobs, she trains her, not even consciously, it's just she's my daughter, and this is what we do, you know. And so she trains her in this role of this caretaking role, where she trains her son in more of a taking care of him and preparing him to go out in the world and be with your dad and do, you know, do the man things out there in the world. And so she just kind of provides the same type of home she does as she does for her husband. And so in a way, he is not expected to take care of everybody other than going out and dealing in the world and having the job, and the wife is supposed to support the job. All of this kind of things. Well, this was like in the probably the 1950s and before. Even in the 1950s, Jung had talked about this rather late in his life, so he must have been realizing that there's a shift in our consciousness, not Brahman, but in just the consciousness, the way we hold relationships. There's an important shift taking place. And women in the 50s started feeling very unhappy with that relationship, kind of very very stifled in it. And in fact, a lot of, in the States, there are studies done that a lot of the women, you know, just had to stay home and take care of the house and whatnot. They weren't the husbands usually didn't want them to work. My father was furious when my mother wanted to go to learn accounting, take a course in accounting. No woman of mine is going to that. But it was hard on her too. And so a lot of the women in the 50s were on Valium. They actually took a lot of Valium and they just sat around and watched these daytime shows, you know, these soap operas and things like that, because they really didn't have the freedom to just run around and go out and develop themselves and have jobs and work and that type of thing. It wasn't allowed. I don't know how it was in Europe, but this was certainly how it was in the 50s in the States. And even if you watch some of the movies in the States, like you may have seen them, like the Donna Reed Show or Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best or all of these, you know, Ozzie and Harriet, all of these family shows, you know. If you go back and watch the family shows, like the serials of the 50s, you know, the weekly shows that come on, they all have this type of a father knows best relationship. But in this era, we're kind of, from a Jungian perspective, we're moving from a more of a patriarchal type of era to more where it's father, son, mother, daughter archetype in the marriages. We're moving more into a sister-brother or brother-sister archetype in terms of the structure of the relationship. And in the structure of that relationship, there's much more equality in the relationship. And both members in the relationship take much more of an equal role. That's very different. It's a very, very different structure, but it's coming actually rather quickly, but then in one sense, you know, if you see moves taking place over decades, and maybe they take a century to complete themselves, that's actually pretty fast in the scheme of things. And so that relationship is much more in people's, it's kind of much more the ruling archetype in the structure of in marital structures and dating structures and all of that. And it's an adjustment. Nobody's completely evolved into that particular archetype, but there's that movement. That movement is taking place, and it takes a while for people to get used to it, for both men and women to be able to really own that up. And I think it takes a long time for that type of an adjustment. It's a very structural adjustment to where there's a definite, just a sense of equality and a comfort with that equality, where we both are working, we both have careers, we are both bringing in money, we are both cleaning the house, we're both mowing the lawn, we're both doing all of the things that need to be done, because it's not possible, also just structurally in the way society is now, for both people for one person to just, as I told about my brother and sister, I mean my brother and his wife, how they were able to manage barely, you know. And here, and for us, even in the middle class and upper middle class, it's like that also, because they want more money. They don't necessarily need more money, but then also the women as well as the men want that equality. They want help with doing all of the chores, you know. And so some men are more enlightened around that than others. Some are falling behind. I know that. When my sister, and one of my sisters who I'm so close to, when she and her husband got married, and they're still married and they're very happy actually, but when he proposed to her, she said, what did she say? Something really funny. She said, no diapers, no marriage. He said, okay. But he's a really enlightened guy also, you know. That means you have to help. I want you to help, you know. I want you to help raise our I want to have children. I want you to help raise our children, you know. It's hard for men to really own that up. It's easier and easier with each generation. But they don't consider it. They've never been raised that way. The mothers didn't even raise them that way. So they don't. That's a big, huge adjustment for men, because they don't know anything about that. They're used to having all these things just naturally taken care of by mom. And it never crosses their mind often. And so... So it takes a lot of patience and a lot of education, and most men understand and they're coming along, and most women also are want it to be that way, but they don't want it to be that way. Men want it to be that way, they don't want it to be that way. There's conflicts and working it out, and these things, I call them archetypal structures that change in the whole world, actually, in the society. But it's pervasive, just like something, I don't know, like if you've seen, what was that? Something happens in one part of the world, and all of a sudden you realize, gee, it's happening all over the world. Yeah. So it's some sort of a change in the consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is something to be conscious of, and for both of you to realize that's really okay. That's okay, and that's the way that it needs to be now. That's the way of the world now, and both people have to equally participate in running the home and running the house and taking care of the children and working. I know just that this is just from some men in the States that over the years I've known quite well and been close to. They're also afraid of getting hooked up with a woman who isn't working, because, or doesn't want to work. That is very burdensome, you know, because that means they have to take on that burden. And that burden is a hard, unless you're coming from a wealthy class or something, that's a big burden to take on. And so they all also feel, a lot of the men that I know anyway, feel very hesitant about getting into that, because they don't know that they can carry that alone. Mm-hmm. And the women who are working, they also feel very hesitant about getting involved with a man who's kind of this patriarchal, authoritarian type, besides of the nightmare of that whole type of attitude. But also, how can I take care, how can we have children and I take care of the children, I take care of the house, I do all the shopping, I do all of the washing, you know, I have to hang all the clothes on the line, I do all of the vacuuming, I'll take care of everything, and I work 8 hours a day. And so there's this working this out until we both both sides of the marriage realize we're in this together and we help each other. And that's becoming more and more and more a reality that everybody is moving into. Every generation, it's more, people are more comfortable in that reality. And it becomes, as we go generation, decade by decade by decade, it's hard to kind of look back to how it used to be, because for many reasons it's not financially, economically, or psychologically possible anymore. People also don't want it because their psyche is also shifting in terms of their own human needs, and also what they're looking for in a partner is not just a servant, you know. And a woman's not looking for a father. She's looking for someone that she can be with and talk to, who's intelligent, and she's intelligent, and you can share deeply all of yourselves with each other. So I know that still plays out to some degree in relationships, but I think if you're conscious of it, it is something, and both of you understand what that's about, and just participate in living in working on that and making that a reality in your marriage to whatever degree is comfortable for both of you. And I think that's an important part of having a relationship work. And it involves both sides. It involves the woman and her taking on a lot of the responsibilities that the man had, and the man sharing and taking on a lot of the responsibilities that the woman had. And when that's the case, both, there's an equality in the relationship. And also, so the men also, I think, which is good, the women get to kind of express their intelligence and their creativity and all of those things in the world. And the men get to have more, I would say, kind of develop that softer side of them, which is so beautiful, like that side that can, wants to be with their baby and change the diapers and, you know, get to spend some time being a house husband, you know. So they get to experience a different type of closeness with their children. They get to raise their children. It didn't used to be how it was. The man would come home at night, you know. And that's not how it is anymore. That's not what men want either. They want that way with that love and that relationship, and so do the women. So these are beautiful things, but it's nice to have some consciousness around it so you don't just take it for granted and then fall back into the old archetype, which doesn't work for either side. It creates problems in the relationship. So there's that. The other thing that Swamiji often talks about is, I think I mentioned this before, is the attitude of... Instead of looking at your partner as your sole source of happiness, you have to have other people in your life. You have to have friends and family, relatives, people in your life that you can satisfy some of your needs, some of your, like say, well, my husband's not very intellectual. Well, get some intellectual friends then, you know. And if your wife doesn't like to ski, and I love to ski, get some ski partners then. Instead of thinking that your partner is supposed to fulfill every one of your needs, be able to satisfy every part of you, that's a pretty tall order. And you say, well, but my partner, he can't do this, and he can't do that, he can't, and she, oh, my partner, she can't do this, and she doesn't do that. Get somebody else to do those things with. You can't have... You want these multi-talented partners. It doesn't work, and it's so much pressure. You have to have other people in your life, not just a partner. But don't sleep with them. That doesn't work. It doesn't. No. I don't know, Europe is a little bit more freer than in the States, I suppose, but over centuries and to this day, people have tried that, you know, having affairs on their partner, secret little trysts with somebody else and this type of thing. They think they can. It's fun for them. What the heck is that? It's. I don't see any good that comes of it. People think that there's something good that comes of that, but actually, your partner can feel something's going on, first of all. And when they find out, then it's very hard to impossible to get the trust back that has been broken. You know, people don't want that. Your partner doesn't want you to go sleeping with somebody else. They might think it's fine for them to do it. I see this in therapy, as a therapist. People who are, usually men, not any comment about men, but they usually are, but they can come, because this is California, you know, California, fruits and nuts. people call Californians that. After all, fruits and nuts. So anyway, they have these. They have these ideas, you know, about open marriages and all of this, and that we should just be free and do what we want, you know, and have an open marriage and sleep with who we want and everything. So there's one patient who was one client who was a real proponent and leader of this movement, you know. And so he was totally into it. He had devotees also that were following him in this open marriage idea. And he was great with it until his wife, who he was very much in love with, got involved with somebody else. Or a boy. He was devastated. He was devastated. Like, how could she do that? You know? It's a good lesson. It destroys something so sacred, you know, that sexual bond is not ordinary. There's something in the psyches that blends, there's a chemistry that blends, there's a special deep intimacy that takes place with that type of a union that has to be held as something sacred, you know. And if you don't do that, which is your free will, of course, to do it, but I think that you are acting out of ignorance. That's not, you're not protecting something that's sacred between the two of you and belongs just between the two of you. And when you mess around like that, it breaks something that you can't get back. You can stay with your partner, and a lot of people do. They stay with their partner. But there's a deep level of trust that is broken. It's a betrayal. Whether you want it to be a betrayal or not, it is a betrayal. And it's very hard, maybe impossible, to get that back. I'm not saying you don't stay with your partner. I just say that the trust and the sanctity and that special, whatever it is that is magical, that takes place, that marriage is something sacred, you know, and it's better for you to honor it and to not go outside of the bounds of your marriage sexually, but to have good friends and do things independently, have people that you hang out with and do things with, you know, but to break those, that bond, I think that you suffer from it. Even if you think it's cool and your society is very open and all of that, I think on a physiological level, on a psychological, almost the level of the psyche, that it doesn't really work. And so this sleeping around and all of this, it may be fun and you may, you know, get a thrill out of your sexuality and all of that, but you're missing out by doing that. You're missing out on something that is so precious and sacred. So I don't expect everybody to agree with that, because maybe I sound like an old fuddy-duddy. But but I think you should think about it and just think about your life and the play of sexuality in your life and think about what it would do, how it would affect your partner if you were to do that, and how would it affect you if your partner were to do that? How would it affect your heart? How would it affect your relationship? And then realize that there, I have something very sacred. I have someone who wants me and who loves me. I'm talking when I'm like with my family members and nieces and nephews and my close friends, my young friends, because I'm a teacher at school, you know, so I have a lot of students I'm quite close with. And they come with me and talk to me about their partners and what they're thinking about and all that. You know what my criteria is? Are they really in love with you? Do they really want to be with you? You know, that's the main thing. Or aren't they? If you're the most important thing to them, if you're precious to them, if they're really in love with you, they want to be with you more than anybody else, they want to be with you more than anything in the world, then everything else, that trumps everything else. It might not be a good match or whatever, you know, and so you might not end up being with them. That's another thing. But if they don't have that towards you, either way, you know, but especially the man toward the woman, if they don't have that, then they're not worth it. I wouldn't get near it. They have a roving eye. They'll just make your life miserable, you know. But if they do have that, then you have something that's very special there. It's very important and very sacred and very special. And if they don't have that, then be friends. Don't marry them. Seriously. They should adore you. They should love you. You know, and then you really have something there. Otherwise, it's a friendship, and just accept that it's a friendship. You don't want to marry them. So that's another thing just throwing out for you to really think about, you know, because these are kind of archetypal things. What if you marry someone who's continuing with a roving eye, who's continually making you feel all that jealousy and abandonment, all these, the dark side of the relationship? They're feeding the dark side all the time by their roving eye. And how will you feel? How would it make you feel? What if your wife is doing that? That's not as usual. Say your wife has a roving eye and all she is getting involved here and getting involved there. How do you think that you'll feel? Oh, I don't mind. Not true. This is just so not true. You know? So these things you have to know. And then the next thing from there is have divorce be the last of 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 the last options of your options. Because the more you, two of you, can go through life together and go through hard situations and come out the other side, the more trusting you are, the more beautiful the relationship comes. It becomes, after you've been tested enough, you can almost take the relationship for granted because it's your family. And that's just how it is. Both of you are like that. This is your family. These are your kids. There's not any wanting anybody else. You're just living out your life and growing and doing the things that you need to do, and you support each other and are respectful of each other and try to take care of each other. Swamiji says, I love is, you know, it's not your, you don't have rights over how your partner is supposed to be treating you. Don't think about it as your right. It's my right that you treat me like that. That doesn't work either. But if you think it's my duty, that's how Swamiji talks, so it's my duty. It's my duty to take care of my children. It's my duty to make sure that my partner is happy and has a good life, that I'm doing everything I can do to provide for my partner to have a good life and for my children to feel at home and safe. That's what I'm about. That's what I'm doing. And so say if both partners are doing that, then there's some real strength in that couple and in that family, because it's not so much about me, it's about my family, it's about my partner, it's about that we are doing everything we can for each other to have a good life, to have a happy life. These are the things, these are kind of the dharmas that make life and marriage something beautiful that becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger as the years go on, you know. But all of these things take, you know, you think it takes sacrifice. So I have to make some sacrifices. Sometimes I have to do something that I don't want to do, or I have to pull back my roving eye because my family's too important to me, and my wife or husband are too important to me. I don't want to ruin it for some simple, you know, fun, loving thing. You know, you don't do it because it's not worth it. These kind of things, and that makes such a stable relationship. Once my mother said, I've told this story once, but I don't know if it ever came to our group here. But once she said, because they made it all the way through to the end. they were together for 54 years, and then my mother passed away, and my father passed away 4 months later. I don't have any life without your mother. So, but my mother told me once, late in her life, maybe in her 50s or 60s or something, she was giving me little advices sometimes and talking to me about things. When she said, the thing is with a marriage, she goes, that it's made up of a lot of tiny little divorces. And she said, the important thing is that you don't both feel that way at the same time. I liked that. I thought that was really beautiful, very, very realistic, you know. Another interesting thing she says, because, you know, we're looking at the long haul, so they were married over 50 years. She said, you know, some years will go by and you're not that much in love. You know, in other years, you're very much in love. Sometimes it's just more of a friendship and you're doing your own things, and, you know. So it's not like it's a 50-year love affair. You know, that we're wild about each other. But the love grows deeper and deeper and deeper, you know. And the freedom of that love is tremendous. It's just tremendous because you have your Ishwara. What I mean by that is that there's somebody who cares about you. Swamiji said so many times, you know, you just need one person that loves you, that cares about you, that you're related with. That's your relationship with Ishwara. I told that the other day. You have to reflect on it because it's really beautiful. Let's see if I've gone through my list. Of the important things. One wonderful thing about a marriage and family, especially if you're a mumukshu, is that the persona is gone after a while. In the family, there's, you know what a persona is? It's a kind of a Jungian term. The persona is the face you put on. Naturally, you don't have to think about it. Naturally happens, thank goodness. Like when you go to your workplace, you know, you have a certain demeanor, a certain way of being, a way of acting that's natural to you and it's appropriate to the workplace. Or if you come to a class, you're giving the class or you're teaching the student, whatever, there's a certain demeanor, there's a certain way of being, you know. And this persona it needs to be very flexible because your relationships and the situations that you find yourself in continually change and your behavior just naturally modifies according to the situation. Jung talked about it in the negative. This person who was a very well-known pastor, a Protestant pastor, very well known and respected, but his family was all falling apart, and he said, what is wrong, because this man is so good, he's such a beloved pastor, he's such a good person. And then So Jung stayed at his house. I don't remember all the details of this story, but Jung stayed at his house, his family's house, because he was close to them. He's also kind of wondering what was going on there. And he stayed at the house, and you know what he realized? Is that it was the pastor who was living at the house. The pastor was always a pastor. His role never, ever changed. Never changed. And so how he was at the church and how he was with his parishioners, how he was when he was shopping, how he was when he went home with his family, he was only the pastor. You know, you couldn't get that persona off. Or usually, you know, and all the kids and the wife, everyone is kind of going bonkers. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't live with a pastor. That's kind of awful. And he realized, well, they were having to carry his shadow. All of it, you know. He couldn't carry his own shadow. And so they all had to carry it for him, you know, and it was really, really a mess. So one of the beautiful things in a normal situation with your family, that persona goes, and you just are who you are, you know. And you know, and there's a lot of still inner child work. There's a lot of projections that are going on, and there's a lot of words are spoken, you know, that are, because there's no persona there. So you say things that maybe be better not to say, but there's no persona there to stop you, and so all kinds of things come out. In one way, it's so nice because you're just at home. And you just are yourself, and you don't have to be anyone else. And they don't expect it either. They're just who you are. All the kids are who they are. They're not, you know, all dressed up and, you know, trying to act appropriately. They're just being themselves. There's something really, really wonderful and beautiful about that. And you can just breathe, and, you know, and then there's all the projections and all of the things that are flying all over the place. And then you have to learn how to be and deal with all of that. That's important too. You know, but you do get to just breathe. You get to be with somebody, and you can just be yourself, and whatever's happening is what's happening. And you can be grumpy, or you can be whatever you are. And your wife can say, "You're so grumpy, for heaven's sakes, what's the matter?" Mm-hmm. Imagine your boss saying that to you at work. Mm-hmm. These are all beautiful things, you know. So longevity of relationships is a tremendous blessing. You know, sometimes you don't have a choice. You have to get out of the relationship. But the more you can hang on, the better, until it's not possible. Sometimes, you know, this what takes over in a relationship is beyond both of you, and it's like that. The beautiful shloka, famous in Indian shloka. It says, you know, imagine two logs. They're floating in the ocean. And the waves push those logs together. Yeah. And hold them together for the longest time. But then at some point, the waves separate. And nothing holds them together. And so sometimes that happens in a marriage where you're not able to rekindle it or reignite it. You know, but or there's been infidelity, and sometimes you can withstand it, but you won't ever be the same, but you can withstand it, but often you can't. So these are just things that stop that. But when you can possibly hang on, you know, and go through the storms together and come out on the other end. And that's a very beautiful thing. So don't be too quick to separate once you've made a commitment. Once you've made a commitment, since you've actually gotten married, you've made that commitment to have that relationship, have that family structure, you know, then it's nice to try to hold on to that and take it seriously. And understand that the more longer you're together, the more the blessing is. Unless the spark is completely gone, it's been killed, it's like the flame has gone out. Also happens. To pray that doesn't happen. So. Well, that's all I have to say, I think. Is there anything else? I'm not married, but I'll tell you one thing that the long term, I have several very, very long term relationships. And just as a teacher, I really learned this from Swamiji, because he very much liked this. And in fact, one student, in light of this, one student who was kind of praising Swamiji was giving a talk. There was some sort of celebration, and he was asked to give a talk. So he gave a talk about Swamiji. And one thing he said, I've never forgotten it. He said, you know, with Swamiji, it's like all the students get on the train, you know, they hook onto his train, you know, and then the train goes, and then that's it. They're on the train with him, you know. And nobody gets off the train. Meaning he never throws anybody off the train. So they come and they're with him, and then they may leave, but he won't ever kick them out. Never, you know. And so that is, whether you're married or not, that attitude where you're willing to go through life with people, whoever's in your life, that ability to go through life with them. I haven't been totally successful at that. It was one or two failures, I would say. On my part, not on their part, on my part. But I really value that. I really value, you know, not backing out of a friendship or of a teacher-student relationship, even though sometimes there's negative transference or these things happen. But, you know, not backing out and just going through the storm with people. The beautiful thing that you learn is that the storm always settles, but sometimes you act out in the storm. You don't wait it out. And I think that's something very beautiful and very rewarding. Then you trust people, people trust you, because you're not going to run away from your friendships and from your relationships and from the people that you care about. You know, these are just, I think these things are things you actually mature into. As you grow older, you start to really become more stable in that way. I got a lot of stability from Swamiji. I learned a lot of these things from Swamiji. And I also experienced kind of that, the safety of that stability, and the safety of knowing that that person is just there. And he's not going anywhere, no matter how awful I am. he's there. That's that guru-sishya relationship. You can also have that kind of stability where you don't throw people out of your life. You would rather go through the storm, whatever it is, you know, and hope that you can survive. You know, you have a guru-sishya relationship, you have, for people who are in therapy, you have a therapeutic relationship that can be really intense with negative transference and all that, to be able to go through those storms. You have familial relationships to be able to not run away. Sometimes that's not possible, but to just be there. You become very strong. And you gain that nishta, because you're not, more and more are not requiring people to be a certain way in order for you to be around them. If you want to be with me, you have to be like this, you know. That's a hard act to follow. People can't always be how you want them to be. They can't always want to be with you. They can't always be in love with you. They can't always be this or that or this or that. They can be everything. Your partner can be everything also. That's how it is. So getting that stability that you really get from, for Jnana, you get it from yourself. Swamiji's stability was from his self. His self is stable. You know, and so if you have yourself, then you're stable. If you don't have yourself, it's hard to be stable, because you're looking for it out here in an ever-changing world with ever-changing people. So how can you be stable with that if you need them to make you happy? So that's why Swamiji used to say, I would make the best husband. He said, I would be, and the little kids, you know, everybody bring their little kids. Once he said, because he loves them, he said, I would be a really good father. Yeah. I'd be such a good father. Because he doesn't expect them to be anything. You know, it's just, he's talking about that stability. You know? And so that stability we all have, we have that, we keep growing into that beautiful stability just because of your mind sitting in your own being. But those, that stability is something to cherish also. Because then if you have that stability, the stability of yourself, you can really be free with people. You can appreciate them as they are. When that stability is weak, or you're in a weakened state, or it has not completely strong, then you're threatened by other people in one way or another taking that stability, that bond away from you. You don't want to be around them, or want to get rid of them in this way or that way, because they're taking somehow who they are, what they're doing is taking away that stability. So for us, as the students, as jnanis, as mumukshus, that's all sadhana for us. That's our sadhana, so that we can really enjoy the stability and enjoy the people. And you can enjoy people as long as you don't need them to be in a particular way. And you bring that to your family also, which is wonderful.
Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.